And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Yes, and make sure those ears are clean. Hello and welcome to this week's Shout Out with Matthew Tosh and Andy Shilton.
Hello, and on this week's show, we've got mental health theme as Kiki Bristol discusses mental health in the run-up to Christmas.
And in our main feature, we hear from a male rape victim who talks to us about the journey since his ordeal.
Plus Brixlow 5 news and music.
We are your LGBTQ radio fix for the week. You've got that theme music back. You're doing the bum bum bum.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's because we're on a different computer, so it's queued up with a kind of different jingle. So
everything's different. Now I should say
different desk,
different desk, different location, different studio. We are actually broadcasting from our kitchen studio. This is Kitchen Studios Limited. I feel. And just to prove that we're in this, we've got our folio.
Steph's doing my dishes for me.
It's our producer in the background there. I do apologise about that. But it's nice to be surrounded by lots of pans. Hands. You're here as well, aren't you? You feeling at home with all of these fellow pans?
What are you trying to say?
I always feel at home with kitchenware.
That's a bit sexist thing to say.
No, it's not.
Hello, female. Are you fine with these pans around you? That's not very nice.
You've missed the point. The two pansexuals in here.
That's right. Matthew and me.
I did actually when I tried to explain what pan people were, somebody said, is that because you're into saucepans?
Yeah,
got some kind of fetish. And,
well, I suppose
as long as they're big enough to fit on my head, I'm happy. So,
you're the kind of person that would fit it on your head and it would get stuck.
That may or may not have happened.
That's kind of your luck with these kind of things, isn't it? So, yeah. No one's commented on the Christmas tree behind you.
I did, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Very winter wonderlandy.
I can see a small one behind you, Andy. It's grown out of Santa's.
Yes. Courtesy of Sainsbury's.
If you check our social media later, you'll no doubt see some pictures from behind the scenes of this setup. We are broadcasting at a slightly different location tonight, just because our home station, is running an election broadcast tonight.
And yes, so BCFM.
BCFM. They'll be tuning in at midnight. But for all intents and purposes, it doesn't mean any different for anyone else listening to the show.
As you said, it's nice to be us broadcasting together. It doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't happen very often. We're always not seen in the same place at the same time. I think there's some conspiracy theories out there.
We try and keep you apart.
Lots coming up, and we are focusing a lot on mental health tonight. Terry's here and Hans are here with the news later. We've got Steph here and Andy Hall as well. So in fact, it's pretty much a busy team, full team tonight, almost, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
Excellent stuff. So we're going to kick off. We've got the Brixlow 5, and they are focusing on this week talking about the mentoring program for people with HIV. So we'll take a listen to the Brixlow 5.
My 5 on Shout Out.
Hello everybody, this is Lauren. I am Brixlow's Positive Voices Manager and I am here today to share with you some of the amazing things that Brixlow and Brixlow volunteers are doing, which is peer mentoring up at the HIV clinic at Southmead Hospital. So for those of you who don't know, we have an amazing team of trained volunteer mentors who are all living with HIV and have been providing one-to-one peer support to either people newly diagnosed or perhaps been living with the condition for a bit longer and struggling with an aspect of their diagnosis. So last summer in 2018, our mentors started to provide the peer support, which they had previously been doing in the community, up at the HIV clinic at Southmead Hospital, the North Bristol Trust. So by being up there, this has allowed individual patients to be able to see and meet and talk with another person living with HIV right there and then at their clinic appointment, which is an amazing thing, and something that we really wanted to share with you. I'm not going to go on any further. Instead, I'm going to pass you over to Andy, who is one of our clinic mentors, who can tell you a little bit about what he does, why he does it, and why it's really, really important. Over to you, Andy.
Thank you, Lauren. When we're in clinic, we're there for 4 hours. Anyone who is newly diagnosed or someone who's been diagnosed for a while and feels like they've got some issues and they could do with having a chat with somebody can come along and see us. They get 45 minutes with us, and it's their opportunity to talk to another person who's also living with HIV. During that time, they can talk about anything that they want to. So it could be to do with housing, drugs, alcohol, sex, finances, relationships, meds, going on holiday, insurance, anything that they really have an issue with at that moment. While we're having a chat, we'll be taking some notes and asking them if they would like us to do a referral. So when we've completed the referral form, we then pass that on to Brigstow, where they will be assigned whoever is relevant person for the support that they need. The reason that I do it is because I know in 2008, when I was diagnosed, I really struggled at the beginning. And one of the nurses said I should go to THT. It took me about 3 weeks to get there due to feeling anxious and just anxious, really, and nervous. By the time I got there, the day that I got there, the office was closed, but Bonnie came walking around the corner and so asked me if everything was okay, and I said no. So I went in with Bonnie and had a chat. When the opportunity arose to give peer support in Southmead, it just made me realise why it was such an important thing to do. Because so many people go to their appointments and see a nurse, see a clinician. They've got so much going on in their head at that time. You know, you probably don't ask all the things that you want to do. So just having that opportunity to go and speak to somebody else, get that support. A lot of people say to me, you're the first person I've actually spoken to about my HIV or who has HIV. So that's why I just think it's so important. Anyway, thank you for listening and tune in next month in 2020. Thank you very much.
If you have a story you could tell in 5 minutes, get in contact. Visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
A slightly topical tune there. I'm not saying there's any rats in your kitchen, Andy.
No, thank you.
So it's a very clean kitchen.
I can assure you there are not.
We'll move on.
Yeah.
Right, well, the news team are in, standing by. Good evening, news team.
Hello. Good evening.
You ready for saw that look, Andy.
I wasn't insinuating anything when I was looking at you talking about rats on this.
Right, let's get to see what's going on in this week's news.
This is Shout Out News on Thursday, the 5th of December.
Pop music mastermind and personality Paul Gambaccini, whose career in British media goes back 40 years or more, will be helping the UK's largest digital radio network mark its 10th anniversary. Absolute 80s came on the air in December 2009 and airs a continuous diet of songs from the decade when there were complex and diverse trends in the political and social life of the UK. Amongst them, battles that the LGBT communities fought over the AIDS pandemic, Section 28, and tabloid newspaper hostility. Mr. Gambaccini, who has always been openly gay, lived and broadcast through the 80s and was friends with many LGBT stars of entertainment during this time. He's also an astute watcher of popular culture and subcultures, and in the new series of programmes he's making for the Absolute 80s Network, he will explore the many tribes that defined this dynamic period. New wave, house music, new romantics, two-tone and sophisti-pop will be under the spotlight as Gambaccini looks back at the different identities that shaped the influential music scene of those years. The new series, says the radio site RCS Today, will air in December and January. Mr. Gambaccini has also been outspoken in his criticism of the police investigations into allegations of historical sexual abuse. Mr. Gambaccini united with other gay men in public life who were totally cleared by the police to criticise the authorities' willingness to believe reports of wrongdoing. And he wrote a book called Under the Yew Tree, which addresses these issues and is available from all good booksellers, gay or otherwise.
In an age of fake news, internet lies and negative reportage, it is important for LGBTQ media to carry the flame of liberty, peace and positivity. So it is great to relay the inspiring story first published in the US gay mag The Advocate about gay Muslim school board governor NJ. NJ Akbar experienced some difficulties reading as a young man, but was helped by teachers to become educated and politically active. Now he is returning to the faith showed in him by working on the school board in his native town. Akbar told the popular gay news magazine that he was proud to be both Muslim and gay, and that he found great solace in his faith. The Victory Fund, an organisation which helps coordinate LGBTQ elected officials across the US, helped back Mr. Akbar's campaign and said, as one of the first openly LGBTQ Muslims elected in the United States history, NJ will become a role model for so many LGBTQ students, students of colour and Muslim students who too rarely see people like them in positions of power. While NJ is focused on supporting students in Akron, the historic nature of his election will allow his influence to extend beyond the borders of his city, inspiring more LGBTQ people to run for office and bring change to their communities. LGBTQ people of colour remain severely underrepresented at every level of government, but it is people like NJ who will change that.
Jamie Lee Curtis, the iconic actor and ally of LGBTQ people and those affected by HIV, has told the popular community website Pride Source that she has always advocated outing closeted politicians who participate in anti-gay or anti-trans activities. Outing means slightly different things to different activists. For some of the chapters of the early 90s group Queer Nation, there was, they said, no right to the closet, and that all LGBTQ people had a moral responsibility to come out, particularly in an era of AIDS and the backlash. In Britain, the group Outrage, which included such prominent supporters as Peter Tatchell, Derek Jarman and Jimmy Somerville, pursued a different approach. They argued that political, clerical and media leaders who pursued anti-gay policies while secretly enjoying the benefits of a gay life should be outed as a public interest story. It was, they said, a form of community self-defence. And one gay journalist put it like this: if Enoch Powell, who made a famous speech attacking immigrants, had secretly been enjoying a relationship with a black woman, then it would have been in the public interest for black newspapers to reveal this fact. Jamie Lee said that as long as gay politicians were not pursuing any prejudicial platforms, then their privacy should be respected. Jamie Lee Curtis's remarks were welcomed by many gay media, including Gay Times magazine and Midland Zone. In other parts of her interview with the Pride Source website, the much-loved star of Halloween and The Fog spoke of her support for people with HIV from the days of the AIDS pandemic in the 1980s.
The Voice newspaper reports that Janet's List, a special pop-up store in London, will be returning for the run-up to Christmas 2019. Based in Islington, the store is the brainchild of Janet O'Garner and will feature products made by small independent businesses headed up by black women. The Voice says that among these confirmed for this year's pop-up are Sheer Chemistry, the hosiery brand chosen by the Kingdom Choir for their royal wedding performance, hair care line Equibotanics and Hannah Pratt Clothing, Colour Short Cards and vegan hair and skincare brand Luxmore London.
Well, for these news stories and more, you can check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Hans Peregrine and
Terry Starr.
Shoutout News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
On, that was Dua Lipa, or bits of Dua Lipa anyway, and don't start now. But it sounds like she stopped. There we go. Never mind. We'll sort it. You happy there, Andy?
Oh, good. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. just ran round to rescue the computer.
It did sound like your fridges was doing
it. Pop yourself on the chair. Yeah, so, bless
anyway,
it.
On to our main feature now. And shout out listener Anthony approached us a few weeks ago to talk to us about his journey since being a victim of non-consensual sex. In the interview that you're about to hear, Anthony, and that's not his real name, talks openly about the physical and mental health impacts of being a rape victim. 9 months ago, Anthony visited a gay sauna somewhere in the West Country area, and whilst he was there, he met a man who later took advantage of him. I met up with Anthony last week, and he started our chat by telling me how an initially sociable night rapidly turned into a non-consensual one.
I went out for a night out on the gay scene, and I went to a bar for a few drinks, and then I went to a gay sauna. And I entered into what I thought was a consensual situation, which ended up with the man having unprotected sex with me against my will, despite the fact that I'd asked him not to several times.
Gosh, that sounds a very difficult situation.
Yeah, it was. It was frightening.
So, just for people who may not be familiar with the whole gay sauna scene, I guess it's a safe space.
That's the idea. There are lots of posters up about respecting people that say no. And clearly on this occasion, that didn't happen. And it was very, very distressing. And the most distressing thing about it, in a sense, was that he just tried to laugh it off. I said no, and he did it anyway. That's not right.
You're in the situation where someone has violated you, gone against your word. What then happened?
I was very frightened. I was very confused. And I didn't really know what to do. So I just carried on my evening and stayed there at the venue, feeling very frightened and trapped. And then I went home.
When you went home, were you home alone? Was there anybody there?
There was no one there, and there was no one there for about 36 hours. I live with a friend, and he was away for the weekend, so I had to kind of deal with everything myself. And it wasn't easy, you know. It was a massive sexual health scare.
You must have been incredibly traumatised and distressed, and in those situations, I guess, but nobody thinks straight.
I've never felt like it ever. For about 4 or 5 weeks afterwards, I felt like I had no control over my emotions whatsoever.
I know that one of the reasons you wanted to air your story was to talk about the implications, the mental health implications, and how it's affected you.
Yeah.
In the weeks following.
After it happened, I don't think I really slept properly for about 4 days. And I basically just lay in bed thinking, I'm going to have to go to the sexual health clinic. I wanted to get on PEP as soon as possible.
Which is post-exposure prophylaxis for HIV, isn't it?
That's correct, yes. And I had a bit of an unfortunate and slightly upsetting experience with the receptionist, who basically told me that there weren't any spaces left at the clinic and that I wouldn't get seen that day. And I almost had a meltdown. They have like a triage form and there are various options on there. And one of them is, have you been sexually assaulted or raped? And the other is, do you think you need PEP? And of course I answered yes to both of those. And then they immediately fast-tracked me. So she wasn't being deliberately obstructive. It just felt that way, I think, because emotions were running high in that particular situation.
And we should say that there was a particular reason you wanted to be seen very quickly. It's because there's a time window, isn't there, for PEP?
That's correct. It's 72 hours. The effectiveness of it gets less if you leave it. The people in the clinic said that it was really good that I came down so soon.
And it shows incredible courage as well, facing up to what's happened and going to deal with it straight away. Did you understand the gravity of what you were doing at the time?
Not at all. I felt like I was walking around in a bit of a daze, to be honest. It was difficult.
But you've got a very important message there, haven't you?
Yes, I think it's super important that if you think you've come into contact with sexually transmitted infections of any kind, that you get yourself tested as soon as you can. Certainly if you think you're in any chance of having HIV passed on to you, then you get onto that medication as quickly as possible.
And presumably you managed to get your course of PEP?
Yes, I did.
Can I ask you about that?
Yeah, well, the first thing is they only give you 3 days' worth in the clinic. So then I had to have an outpatient appointment at the HIV department at Southmead 3 days later, which felt like it prolonged the whole thing. But they were very sympathetic up there and very nice. It's not nice medication, and it's not something you would even possibly want to do if you didn't need to. I felt sick for a month.
And after the course of these, presumably you have to go for another HIV test.
Yes, you have to do a 10-week HIV test. Luckily, everything came back clear, but I wasn't, after having gone through the course of the medicine, I wasn't expecting it to be any other way, but it was still a massive relief.
So did you feel that gave you some sense of closure on the infection risk?
Yes, definitely. But not on other things. The sort of mental health side of things is still with me.
Did you report this as a crime?
It took me a while to decide to do it, but I did, yes, within a week of it happening.
Do you mind me asking if you were afraid of something?
I was afraid of not being taken seriously. I was afraid that they would just say it was my fault because I was where I was.
So was there any moment or something that happened that galvanised you and made you take the plunge and report it to the police?
I was motivated to do it by a conversation with my housemate, who basically said to me, 1 in 10 people, male-on-male sexual attacks, get reported. And did I want to be in the 10% or the 90%? And I decided, not immediately after the conversation, but within a few days, that I wanted to be in the 10% of people that report. I think it's all part and parcel, in a funny way, of the recovery process. Even if there's no trial, that you're not feeling like you're leaving them to get away with it, it is now in writing that that happened.
We should say that the police case has been closed, hasn't it? And that's why we're able to talk about it, even though you haven't given any specific details.
Yes, that's correct. And the police are quite strict about not talking about it if the case is open.
You said it was difficult going through that process with the police. How were the police with you?
They were really lovely, actually. They took me to a special studio where basically what they do is when they do your interview, they don't take reams of notes or anything. They record it. So you sit in a sort of fairly comfy sort of living room and you're in nice comfy chairs and it's videoed and recorded.
So just to be clear, you were given the opportunity to give your statement as if you were giving it in court, and that would have been played. You would have not had to stand up and face and make eye contact with the person who raped you.
That is exactly correct, yes. And the police were really lovely and took a long time to explain that and make me feel at ease.
Because let's be clear, it's a traumatic experience what you've been through. To be then faced with this unknown process just must add more weight.
Yes, it does. And I think that's half a problem. Half a fear is of the unknown. And half my fear moving on from that was like, what happens if it gets to a point and it does go to court and I have to be involved in this humiliating court case about having been raped in a sauna? What are people going to think of me and all that kind of thing?
Now, you mentioned friends. How important was it having trusted friends around you?
Very. I needed a lot of support. I was emotionally, for at least a month, if not more afterwards, I was emotionally all over the place. I was struggling at work. I was having meltdowns in the most inappropriate places. I had a breakdown in the station forecourt, and I was like, this can't go on. That was when I decided that I needed to talk to somebody professionally.
I guess that must have been really tough at that time, but I suspect that's because you were suffering from post-traumatic stress.
It was, yes, as I found out. And it was the most bizarre mental state I have ever been in, I think. And like I said, I decided to find a counsellor, and I went to a very nice lady, and yes, she told me that I was suffering from PTSD, and we talked about grief. And she said, what you need to do now is grow around your grief, because at the moment, your grief is consuming you. And that's effectively what PTSD is. It's like not giving yourself any time to compute what's happened. And so therefore you kind of develop this mental state where you kind of can't deal with anything. And I took a big step, which is actually a big sort of development step for me as a person in a funny kind of way. I just dropped everything at the busiest time of the year and went away for 2.5 weeks. And lo and behold, I had some time to start sorting myself out, and work were absolutely fine without me.
You talk so candidly about this. I find this incredible, and I know you've agonised, if I can say this, about whether or not to do this interview. It hasn't all been plain sailing there, has it?
No, it hasn't. I would describe my mental state as having been fluctuating this year, and I have had a very, very low point where I think it's the closest to feeling suicidal that I've ever been. I did take an overdose and I was hospitalised, but I feel strongly that it wasn't because I wanted to die. It was more because I wanted to cry out for help that I wasn't getting. I decided that what I needed to do was speak to somebody who I could actually talk to about what happened. And it's not straightforward, but I am in the process of organising that now.
And to clarify, this is with a support network, a support charity, a specialist counsellor?
Yeah, there are all sorts of charities all over the country that deal with rape and sexual assault counselling, and I've been in contact with several of them, so we're getting there. it's taking me a while to sort something out.
Is it because you're finding it difficult?
Partially, yes, but partially because the services are so stretched as well, which particularly the NHS ones, which is very sad. But I'm finding the right people to talk to.
What I'm taking from what you've said to us is the incredible importance of building a support network around you. There could be somebody listening to this who has maybe experienced a similar thing in the past. Whatever's happened, they may be finding it extremely difficult to face up to what's happened and talk about it. What advice would you have for them?
You should never be afraid to rely on your friends. I think that's the strongest message. Even if you decide not to report to the police or do any of the other things that I did, just talk about it. Find somebody you trust and talk about it, because it makes it so much easier if you don't pretend that it didn't happen.
Anthony, you've been incredibly honest and open with us. Can I ask you, how are you feeling now? You're, what, 9 months on from this incident? How are you faring up?
I don't think a day goes past when I don't think about it. But because the police case is over, it's enabling me to be a little bit more open about it. And I think that helps. I have my moments, but I think I've had my darkest moment now. I think I'm definitely feeling more like me.
And that seems a very fitting place to leave it. Anthony, thank you for talking to Shoutout.
Now, if you have been affected by anything you heard in that interview, then there are a number of services or organisations you can speak to for help and support, including the Greenhouse Project and the Somerset and Avon Rape and Sexual Abuse Support Service, SARSAS. Details of these and other organisations will be posted on the programme page of the Shoutout website, which you can find at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
The Shoutout Podcast.
Oh, there's nothing like a bit of Blur there. The Universal. I was accused of making some people in the studio feel old.
Not really? Old. I'm not sure if I could get any older. Sorry, Steph.
I try to think when that was...
I like the fact you keep her mic off too. That's marvellous. No, she's so quiet.
Very good. Is that your top plate just dropped on your in your mouth, or are you eating?
No, I was just actually checking, because of course Hans is vegan. And I raced into Co-op earlier. I was like, I'll just grab some snacks. And I picked up loads. And I'm like, that'd be vegan. I've just checked them all. Not a single one of them is. And I feel really disappointed in myself.
Right. Well, we'll continue the kitchen shenanigans. But right now, our very own Lara Lalamy from Kiki Bristol is in conversation with Epiphany, one of her housemates, about mental health in the Q-tipoc community.
With Christmas coming up, and knowing how at Christmas you can get very lonely, and especially you haven't got family to support you, especially if you're a black queer person and you haven't got their support around you. Statistically, BME people are less likely to go to their GP and doctors to check up on their mental health. Yeah. They have less of a language around it, and they're 3 to 5 more times likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia, but be given way higher doses of drugs. So there's a lack of knowledge around BME mental health, yeah, within the services anyway. But we're going to take it away from that external viewpoint and make it more internal towards us. We're talking to our fellow BME people and our allies who want to help us in this time. So what do you feel about BME mental health in the UK, Epiphany?
It's probably worse than we think it is, because it's something we don't really talk about. So
from your personal experience, like, what do you... Because you say that you're a therapist's son. So what was that like for you growing up?
Well, I mean, because my mum is a therapist, and she's worked with, she's worked with people that basically were dying. Like, she's very much been exposed to, you know, like a deep, deep depression,
yeah,
from a professional point of view. Obviously, it's something she never really brought home. But, like, overall, mental health is not really something that we discuss quite often.
Even in that environment.
But I think, so, like, I definitely would say I've been through, like, I've had episodes of, like, going up and down. And, like, it's never been something that I know that I could talk to her about it, but like, it's never really something I felt like I needed to share.
Definitely not, because in my own personal experience, like, even though my mum was very open and like honest with me, I didn't feel like I could give that back.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel like it. And when I did try and say like, oh, maybe it was because of attention, but when I did say, oh yeah, no, I think I need to go see a therapist, it was, oh no, that's not a black person thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, in our communities, in our families, like, we're very open with each other, but only through happiness. So like, we're very happy to share, you know, like when something's going great, when like, you know, like to go dancing, do everything else, a celebration. But when it comes to the sadder stuff, like, we don't really talk about it, because
we don't have
the language. We don't have a language, and it just seems like, you know, you're not really black if you're sad.
And you're weaker.
Exactly,
like, for some reason, like, I have such a problem with being vulnerable and like laying my mental health out there. Like, I do it now. I force myself to say, no, I've got a therapist.
Yeah.
Because I want people to know that it's not just a walk and a skip in a park. Like, I'm not going through life like I'm amazing at everything. Like, I do struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for people to know that. But like, again, like, no one, like, no one's telling anyone that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I tell people, go and get a therapist. It's basically like training for your brain. It's like going to the gym, but mentally.
Definitely. If you can, get yourself a therapist. Because you don't have to be, you don't have to have mental problems to get a therapist. Everyone needs a therapist.
So that leads really nicely into my next point. So why do you think checking your mental health is so necessary, especially in winter when you've got seasonal depression disorder? Yeah. So,
well, because like, checking your mental health and therapy in general is about self-reflection, you know, and like, analyzing the things that have gone in your past that affect you at the present and that will affect your choices and decisions in the future. So if it's something that you don't really think about often, like, you can fall into the same routines and like making the same mistakes again and again because of past traumatic experiences that you have that you might not be aware of. So it's very, very, well, you know, it's very mentally balanced to think about, you know, things that have gone on before. Like, sometimes obviously it will be very triggering, but it's good to like take that step back. Like, if you need a few days to just think about it, you know, like, take space for yourself, as opposed to like giving a little thought for a minute and then just try and do something else to like push it back down.
And this is beyond self-care. Like, self-care is like when you make sure you're taking time out for yourself. This is generally checking your own brain. Most of the time when I was younger, I used to be like, oh, I'm just sad. I'm just a very, very sad, sad, sad girl. Like, I'm just not happy. And I never once thought I was even a little bit depressed. And then, I don't know, it's just suddenly you get hit with it. You get hit with it. And it's such a common thing, especially in the UK.
It's very common.
So how do you recognise the difference?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's common everywhere. It's just not diagnosed everywhere. So like, in African countries, because it's not in the language, depression is not something that we think about. So if someone in, you know, like, my mom's youngest brother, like, because obviously she's having training, she recognized that he's always been depressed, but everyone else just thinks he's quite lazy. He's a bit lazy, like, he's just not doing things, he's not, because the language is not fair. Like, it's like, oh, it's this, it's that, as opposed to actually, you know what, this person is depressed. Only you yourself really would know what you're feeling. But there's a difference between feeling sad regularly and then feeling depressed. So you can be sad because you stubbed your toe. You could be going through grief, for example. So if you've lost someone very close to you, and a week after you're very sad, 2 weeks after you're still sad, 6 months after you're still sad, that's okay. But if a year or 2 years time, like, you still think about that person, but like, that level of sadness has never really gone, you know, like, it's still a very much constant thing. Obviously it won't be as strong as it was before, but like, you're still very much not coping with it. Like, there would be some level of perhaps not depression, but other there's symptoms level, of like mental health issues going on there.
So just to wrap up quickly, what can I do? Say if my friend was going through, what would you suggest me doing? Just talking?
Well, I mean, talking, but obviously
you're like that,
it's very hard to open up about depression because there's a lot of stigma around it, and also like, there's internal prejudice that we have. Like, there's the internet is amazing, you know. Exactly. There's like a lot of resources out there. I would recommend there's a TED talk by Andrew Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
He did a TED talk, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago. He actually also wrote a book about depression. So he was just talking about his experiences.
And also, if you're looking for anyone to talk to, Kiki is there for you. We are the BME or Cutie Pop group within Bristol. So if you want to like talk to anyone, we're totally here. And there's other mental health services for you too.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
This is Martha Reeves and the Vandellas.
Nice.
Nowhere to hide. Nowhere to run, sorry. Nowhere to run.
Lovely bit of Motown there,
lovely
Matthew.
Bit of Motown, yes.
Yep.
And just lifting the spirits at the end of the show. We have some very serious topics tonight. And if you want to find out any of the previous shows, you can go to our website. But I should say, we have a bit of an apology because not all the shows are there at the moment, are they, Steph? Well,
no, last week we had two power cuts which halted the whole recording of the show and the listen again on BCFM.
It is a little bit of a heart drop, isn't it? You're on air and all of a sudden everything goes off.
Yeah. Also, there were some beautiful one-liners.
Yeah.
Terribly sad.
Well, we had to cover, didn't we, live on the FM?
We did. Yeah. We're going to try and recover that show by doing it live after we finish doing this one, and then it will be up on our website as a podcast, and I will tweet and put on Facebook as well when it's up and ready. So those people that did take part in that show, which is very important to us, will have a voice.
Absolutely. That's great stuff. That's what it's about.
Thank you. Thank you, Steffi. Thank you. Good stuff. So, important topics. Mental health was the one tonight, and about some stories about people looking forward about mental health and doing things about it. And like you've heard with Anthony's interview, talking about finding people to talk to. Talking's really powerful, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
Very much so.
It's got to be one of the nicest things, talking. You know, being surrounded by friends, family, and the like, whatever problem you've got can really make a difference.
You
if you
do
talk
it as a job, Hans.
So. I talk for a living, and I listen for a living, and I talk for free as well. Yeah, well, I work for the Hope Project, listening to men who are struggling with suicidal thoughts, and that's a very important subject as well.
Mm.
Men knowing that it is okay to be feeling things and to be struggling with things, and that there is a safe space for them to share what's going on for them.
Because there is a particular issue with men. Statistically, there's an issue with men, isn't there? Opening
up. So.
Yes, and I think still the understanding is skewed. People think that it's men over a certain age are actually coping better, but actually statistically it's men between 30 and 65 that are the ones that are struggling the most still to know it's okay to talk. It's not that men under 30 aren't struggling with their mental health, it's just that men over 30 still feel statistically issues. That they can't talk.
Right. I didn't know that.
Linked to midlife crisis in a way, I suppose, isn't it? Quite seriously.
Yes, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
And I think in the special podcast we're going to put up, we're going to be talking about coping at Christmas.
Brilliant. Well, listen, that music means that it's time for Andy to put the kettle on and we can wrap up this show. Milk, no sugar for me, please.
Anyway, coming up in a bit, we'll do that. But if you want to find the links for the show or listen again, just head over to our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt. On next week's show, the producers of Rent are coming in. I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, should be good.
We'll be having a conversation with them.
That's it for this week. Thank you, Andy. You've been listening to Shout Out with Andy Shilton and Matthew Tosh. Producer is Steffi Barnett. Until next week, everybody, say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Where's that tea? Give me a cup of tea.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.